This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm here this week with Susan. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia. Welcome back to the States.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. I'm back from Queens country. I escaped with my liberties intact, but not really, because I came back to understand that absolutely nothing has changed, apparently, even though we now have the Mueller report.
Yes, absolutely. Everything is different. Absolutely nothing is different. The Mueller report is done, but whether it's actually changed anything about our understanding of what happened in 2016? No, not yet. But it's definitely changed the media landscape right now.
We don't know what's in it, right? Like, do we know anything that's in it?
Well, Kate, here's what we do know. So what happened is on Friday, Mueller must have pulled an all-nighter and got his report done, handed it in. And then on Sunday, the new Attorney General Barr released a like four-page update, I guess you'd call it, on the Mueller report, which is what is now being crowed about by Trump as an exoneration of him, even though like the one part that's actually quoted says this is not an exoneration. So here's what we know that's new, though. So this letter is very, very brief and very light on the details of the Mueller report. But what it does seem to establish is that, first, Mueller made the determination not to seek conspiracy charges against any Americans for coordination or conspiring with Russian nationals of Russian government and their interference in the 2016 election. And Mueller also made the determination to not make a determination about obstruction charges against President Trump.
Well, just to clarify, you're saying he made a determination actually not to make the determination, not that he didn't make yes. the determination. Okay.
Yes, he made the determination that he was not going to determine something with regard to obstruction, based on what we see from Barr's summary of it. So in the end, at least to date, the completion of the Mueller report has not done the one thing we actually thought it would do, which is give us conclusions of some sort. Okay, with respect to the interference issue, the conclusion issue, I guess there is a conclusion there to an extent, and that's that there's no one that's going to be indicted for it. But in terms of obstruction, the whole point of having a special counsel is a way to have a prosecutor, an investigation under the DOJ, under the executive branch of the government, that is nevertheless independent of it and can independently review and investigate without being too unduly swayed by political considerations. That didn't happen here, apparently, because what Barr's letter says is that Mueller did not conclude about obstruction, but he's going to go ahead and do it. And he, along with Rosenstein, concluded that there was no obstruction, so we're done.
That's pretty demoralizing, I guess. I mean, I want to back it up to Mueller. Forget what Barr had to say for an instant. And why would Mueller decline to make a determination about obstruction?
Well, we don't. Well, to back up a second, like, I don't feel demoralized at all by this. I feel like this was pretty much for the past 6 months where we were headed. It's been pretty clear for a while now that there was not going to be a quote-unquote collusion indictment, which I don't even know that because collusion is not a crime.
So maybe against Trump. But I really thought against some other actors, like maybe Don Jr., yeah, maybe.
And that was considered, but for the past, like, 6 months, it's been, I don't know, it's been pretty clear that was not the direction this was heading in. The indictments, the big ones, all the crimes they found, and there were lots of them. If it was going to go that way, I think we'd have known midway through 2018 at the latest.
You know, one of the things others theorized also is, like, you know, the plea deals taken by some of the players in the last, I mean, I don't even know how many people have been indicted now in the last year or 2 years. But, you know, that maybe they gave something up towards this investigation to help indict this president or any of his close associates, that there was something valuable there, because they're just not getting these pleas for nothing.
Yeah, that's the biggest question I still have. But, like, the number one question I have still, given that we don't have any answers really yet, is Flynn. I mean,
right.
What is going on with Flynn? Is it just because Trump could offer a pardons at any time that they were forced to give such incredibly sweetheart deals? And yeah, like, I'm not gonna judge Mueller yet because we can't do that. But if there's one thing that I feel at this point ready to be highly critical about, it's how he handled Flynn. Because Flynn's crimes were serious. The judge, like, is apparently has had enough of that nonsense too. That's why part of the reasons for the delays there is that the judge has made comments about like how extensive Flynn's crimes were in comparison to the possible punishment he's facing, which made sense when it seemed like Flynn might have been cooperating for a bigger picture indictment or bigger picture case. And that doesn't seem to be the case. So I don't know now how to explain what happened to Flynn other than they knew Trump would pardon him if they tried to do anything to. I don't even know. Yeah,
but,
I do have a lot of
questions. That shouldn't even have a bearing on it. It just shouldn't.
I mean, it has to, because like otherwise, how are you going to make a deal? Like if someone's holding like a get out of jail free card, which they kind of are in an almost literal sense, you have to take that into account when you're doing your negotiations for the plea. But even with that, it does seem like Flynn's getting too sweet of a deal.
Right. I mean, again, the question is, if you're negotiating something, what are you negotiating for? Like, what did they get from Flynn? If there's nothing here at the end of the day, that's what I don't understand.
I don't either. Yeah. But back to your other question about whether Mueller did determine that he would not make a determination on obstruction, that's still an open question. Probably the longest quoted line in the whole report is where Barr writes, the special counsel states that, quote, while this report does not conclude the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. So we know that the report doesn't conclude there was a crime. We don't know the why. Because what the Barr writes next is the special counsel's decision to describe the facts of his obstruction investigation without reaching any legal conclusions leaves it to the attorney general to determine whether the conduct described in the report constitutes a crime. Note, it does not say that Mueller left it to the attorney general. It said that Mueller's failure to make a determination means Barr took it upon himself to reach a conclusion. When, for all we know, the report made the more traditional, that's kind of a loose use of the term, but a more, I guess, expected and more historically consistent decision to refer it to Congress to make a decision rather than to make it himself.
Okay, so that's generally what we could have expected.
That was kind of what people, that was the general thought about how this was going to go, because that's kind of how it's gone in past.
But Congress still can, right? This doesn't mean that Congress.
They can, but
still
it's been totally. I mean, the whole investigation had wings clipped, basically. Not the investigation, but the whole momentum behind the report, because the whole narrative now, and Trump has full on one here, is that he's managed to spin this as if there was nothing in there that's concerning to him, when that's obviously not the case. Because it's very clear that Barr's letter was written in a way that, you know, provides maximal political benefit to the president. It gives minimal information about what Mueller found. And it basically answers the question without saying that Mueller answered it, that there was nothing here that's problematic. Especially with the obstruction issue. That one is extremely unfortunate because we don't know. So what we do know is that they do have a footnote somewhere in there, Barr does, that says our conclusion that there was no crime is not based on the fact that you can't indict a president. It's based on the fact there's no crime. But what it doesn't say is that this conclusion, they don't say it's not based on the fact that Trump as president leads the DOJ, leads the executive agencies, and therefore cannot obstruct justice.
Right.
For doing his job, which is actually how Barr got the job. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Which is what I actually expected to hear from Barr, that regardless, like this president cannot, you know, like the presidential power is such that it can't, sitting president can't be indicted.
No. Not just that. Can't obstruct justice. Huh. What Barr's reasoning got higher is with that letter. It says like the president can like take any presidential action and it doesn't matter what his intent was. Doesn't matter what his goal was. It's not obstruction. Yeah. So we now have a case where the president not only can't be indicted, but also is free to obstruct in the open, which is exactly what we have.
What kind of bearing could this report? I mean, so the investigation, I mean, like, was not just confined to, you know, the DOJ, right? I mean, like, Mueller also was connected to other jurisdictions, like the Southern District of New York. I mean, like, do you think there was enough information sharing that we might see indictments coming out of somewhere else based on some of his findings?
That's very possible. All we know is that Mueller has considered his job concluded. That doesn't mean that there's definitely follow-up work still going on. There's tons of it. But Mueller appropriately decided it was time for his role as special counsel to come to an end and that non-special counsel mechanisms could handle the rest from here.
It happened pretty quickly after Barr's confirmation, didn't it?
It did. Well, it seems like they were waiting to get, you know, chuckles out of there.
Maybe. Yeah, that's right. There was chuckles. Well, I wonder, I haven't looked at Trump's Twitter account. I don't know how the White House was responding to this, but has the White House gotten a chance to read the report?
It's not clear. I would assume they had. And there's some indication, I don't know if it's reliable, but the Trump panel was saying today that he was not going to seek executive privilege on anything in the report. Yeah, it's hard to say.
Wait, what does that mean? Does that mean they're willing to make it public? Is that what you're trying to say? I'm confused.
That's what Trump's comments this morning kind of suggested, but that was very vague. And of course, remember 2 years ago, Trump was saying, oh, of course I want to have an interview with the special counsel, and it never happened. So that could just be bluster, but there was some suggestion there. So it's not clear if Trump's seen the whole report. But the thing is, we know this report is not going to be good for Trump in the sense that it approves of his actions or supports his stance, or the fact that he's been going on for 2 years saying, oh, I believe Putin. Putin strongly denied that there was any interference. So therefore, it didn't happen. Yeah, the report unquestionably, even though Barr kind of skips over it, unquestionably concludes that there was an attack on U.S. sovereignty in 2016 by Russia. And that Trump has then spent time
since every intelligence agency in the country.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If you've been listening to 45th for a while, you know I'm a big fan of Stitch Fix. Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service that finds and delivers clothes, shoes, accessories fit your body, budget, and lifestyle. And it's amazing because all you do is you go online, fill out what kind of clothes you need, what kind of things is your style, what you'd like to maybe change your style to, and they go through and bam, pick you out a set of outfits and clothing that you desperately needed and didn't know.
I gotta say, I like Stitch Fix because it's braver than I am, and I have been that person who's stuck in a clothing rut for years, and now, I've lost weight, I feel like I want to explore what else my body can take, and so Stitch Fix has been great because, you get your own personal stylist. They have a personal stylist that handpicks items sent right to your door, and I have tried on and kept, pieces that I honestly probably would never pick myself.
Yeah, so I've gotten some great clothes from them that were apparently they read my mind and were very much exactly my style. And I told them that. Here's what I wear. Find me and wear this. My last one, I was like, okay, you know what? I definitely do this all the time. Give me something different. And they did. And I opened it and I was like, oh, reds and yellows. I can't wear that. Flower prints. What is this? But, this is what I asked for. So I tried them on and I really love them. And I even got this cute pair of red shoes I wore out. And I'm like, I look stupid in these. And I was like, they look great. So, yeah, it was a great way for me to get clothes that I never would have probably had the courage to seek out and find for myself.
And if it doesn't work out sometimes, you could try it on, pay just for what you love and then return the rest because shipping, exchanges, and returns are completely free.
If it doesn't work out, then nothing lost. You just return it.
Yep. And there's no subscription, so you can sign up and get your scheduled shipments or just get your fix whenever you want.
So get started now at stitchfix.com/45th, and you'll get an extra 25% off when you keep all the items in your box. That's stitchfix.com/45th to get started today. stitchfix.com/45th.
And I want to see you in those red shoes next time I see you.
I'll wear them tomorrow, maybe. Now, there is one thing in the report that I may have missed it, but I've not seen too much attention on yet, that to me seems like one of the other potential new things we may have learned. It's a line in Barr's report where he says, but as noted above, the special counsel did not find the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in these efforts. Quote, despite multiple offers from Russian-affiliated individuals to assist the Trump campaign. Now, is that talking about stuff that we already know about, like the Trump Tower meeting? Or is that talking about something more?
I mean, it could be talking about what we already know about. Otherwise, why would they even put it in there?
Unless there's more to it and that Barr does not want to talk about in this letter.
But then why would he bring it up? That's what I'm trying to say. He could admit whatever he wants in this.
Well, no, he can't because Mueller will eventually testify on the Hill. So anything he writes in here, he has to justify and explain as a legitimate, summary of the report. Mm. So he is constrained to some degree. It cannot be the case that the Mueller report says they are totally colluding all over the place every single day. Like so much collusion. Oh, my God.
And Barr says nothing to see here.
Yeah, that didn't happen here. And this isn't surprising. To back up, so one of the missteps, I don't know if that's the right word to use, the whole idea of collusion, that word is so problematic for so many ways. And it's obviously an issue with Mueller and his decision with regards to whether to prosecute anyone here. And I do white collar defense. And one of the areas I work in is antitrust. And to me, collusion's always made me think of the antitrust sense of the word.
Explain that before you move on.
Well, I wonder if Mueller's report is getting into an issue that's commonly encountered in antitrust cases. For price fixing, for instance, where two companies agree to set prices at an anti-competitive point, And when that happens explicitly, when two companies like call each other up and say, hey, Bob, you going to set the prices on your widgets like, you know, $2 higher? And Bob's like, yeah, sure, John, we'll do that. That's clear cut crime. What happens probably more commonly is a much fuzzier situation. And it's tacit collusion is what it gets called. And that's our sometimes price leadership. What happens, though, is you can have cases of what is in effect price fixing where two companies never talk about it. The two companies don't have to talk about it. If you have a situation in the market, if circumstances are right for it, you don't need to actually talk to collude. You don't need to have a conversation. If all parties know what your goals are, you can take actions independently with an eye to one another and coordinate and collude. Collude's the word they use for that, tacit collusion, without ever having a full-on conversation. Now, in the Trump case, so let's say that there was some sort of
coordination.
Intent. Yeah, well, I'll say intent on the part of both Russia and Trump, or Trump campaign people, to work to mutually beneficial aims. They could reach an agreement there without ever, ever talking. There was never any need for them to talk or explicitly communicate this. You can have Russia sort of float the offer through intermediaries, and you can have Trump do something visible to accept the offer without ever saying he's accepting it. And the one reason that seemed like that might not be as huge a concern here is that there's such goddamn idiots a lot of the time,
right,
and they do such unnecessary things, as we see again and again with the existing prosecutions, that it seems possible they talked about it without ever needing to talk about it. But what if they didn't? Like, here's the thing. We know that, like, Trump and Putin were both, like, talking behind the scenes. Not talking, but they were both saying, we need to send signals to one another, like in 2015, when you have...
I mean, signals. So what about all these people involved, like Roger Stone? I mean, all these folks passing messages back and forth. You've got all these emails and Twitter DMs and all this stuff happening where people are literally... I mean, like, they've left a huge trail of, hey, I've got this contact. He wants to speak to you. I mean, like, they're going to do this with the emails. I mean...
They've left a huge trail of, like, implicit or tacit or attempted tacit collusion.
And Cohen told us that Trump never directly gives an order. He just signals what he wants.
Well, think about the emails from Sater way back when in 2015,
right,
where they said, like, I'm going to get, like, you know, President Putin to go on TV and praise Trump. And that did happen. When that happened, Trump is like, I'm going to praise him back. I mean, that's kind of a handshake in a way. Not in a legal sense, not in a criminal sense, but that could be effectively a handshake between two people who both know what their aims are. And Russia's like, hey, look what we could do to help you. You're not going to retaliate if you happen to win, right? And Trump's like, oh, no, no. Go ahead, do what you're doing. I'm cool with it.
Right. And that's what he's done. He has taken absolutely no...
That's what he's done.
He's taken no action to sanction, Russia for their interference. It obviously seems that he's just quiet
on this.
He's
never acknowledged they did interfere.
Exactly. And the other thing is this, I mean, and we've heard this a lot in the last couple of years, that it's not the crime, it's the cover-up, right? So collusion or no collusion, I mean, with the Comey fire, I mean, like, it was so... the failure to find any obstruction kind of is shocking to me. That's, I mean...
Well, that is too, but it goes... Part of that was because they claimed, or Barr says there's no underlying crime. But we don't actually know that yet. One, there was tons of underlying crimes because there are, like, what, 30 people indicted for them and, like, many guilty pleas?
But that's not how obstruction works, does it, Susan? Right. I mean, whether or not an underlying crime, I mean, the obstruction is the obstruction of
investigation. Underlying investigation. Yeah.
Right. So
yeah,
there's an underlying
investigation.
There was, exactly. Whether or not they found the crime, he was obstructing the investigation, and that's the crime.
And also, it could be why we didn't find any of the specific crime that they're claiming matters here, which is conspiracy or collusion. Because, but we don't actually know that's what the termination was. We don't know that Mueller said there was, what we do know is that Mueller said there is no crime here that I'm going to indict. But that's where the whole issue of tacit collusion comes back. Those cases are almost impossible to prosecute if they're truly done in a tacit sense where there's no explicit communications. You just don't get indictments, let alone convictions in those circumstances. So if that's what happened here, if Mueller found that there was evidence of implicit coordination that he could not prosecute, then that doesn't mean there's not evidence of criminal activity. It's just he did not believe there's anything there that was indictable. And again, we have Trump saying in July of 2016, Russia, if you're listening, go ahead and release the emails.
Right.
So if it was tacit, it wasn't really even that tacit. It was just like a thin veneer of plausible deniability. And that's why the Mueller report, you know, this is probably always coming this way. The Mueller report we don't need that to tell us the evidence in front of us. We mm-hmm. don't need that to tell right. us
the evidence
Trump
of our eyes.
Clearly encouraging, yeah.
right.
Trump was encouraging Russia. Trump never punished Russia. Trump has never said a bad word about Russia, and that's what tacit coordination would look like. It means that you know a foreign enemy is going to do something to help you, and by not taking action, you're taking an action.
Now what? Now what? Now hearings in Congress?
Well, we wait for the report.
Oh yeah. That's a question. Is this report public record? I mean, does the public have the right to this report?
No.
It's not. Poop.
So the full report will never be released, and it shouldn't be released, because the full report presumably has all kinds of information on, like, sources and methods, like ways of foreign intelligence.
Redact that
stuff. Well, yeah. But the full report should never come out. So that's, but by the full report, I don't mean that part. I mean the full report of conclusions and findings by Mueller. That should come out. Will it? Probably not, because Barr has indicated he'll give a summary in a few weeks' time. So he's going to drag this out forever. He has given no indication whatsoever he's going to give the full report. And McConnell keeps blocking resolutions calling for the release of the full report. So, again, we'll probably never, ever know exactly what Mueller found, unless he gets called to testify and tells us.
And I saw that Lindsey Graham is now saying, in light of this report that exonerates our president, he's going to call for an investigation into the other side, quote, whatever that is. Who's the other side?
Clinton.
Clinton had nothing to do with this investigation.
Yeah, but it's tit for tat. They're like, well, now we're going to investigate some Democrats because you investigated Republicans. I mean, this is just
a
massive breakdown.
Already? We had that. We had the Clinton hearings on. We already had the email hearings. I mean, that's done.
Yeah, but in this country, rule of law is no longer the driving force. Yeah. Investigations are done for political purposes primarily, as we can see from Graham's comments.
Yeah. Well, the House has their powers too then. I mean, if they're going to do this, so going to be a big shit show for the next couple of years.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Like, Trump, here's why Trump definitely won this, because he won the news cycle. And we instantly have, without even the report, with just the summary, which has a lot of questions left unanswered and a lot of suggestions, there's more that's important here that's not being disclosed. The media is already full on, like, no collusion. And we're on to the next thing. But here's the thing. Like, if Mueller had waited until now to indict everyone, it'd be a fucking insane explosion of a scandal. And it doesn't, I mean, it's insane. The sheer amount of criminal activity the president was adjacent to is, I mean, it's got to rival Nixon.
Oh, I think he outdid Nixon. I mean,
exceeds Nixon, yeah.
In spades. I mean, like, even well before he was president, but yeah, even throughout all this time. So the report, though, the findings of the report, indictment or no indictment, can be used to impeach him, though, right?
I could, but it was never going to. I mean, that's the thing. Like, Mueller was never, ever going to save us. He never had the ability to.
Susan, no.
What? He couldn't. It doesn't. Yeah. If Mueller had come out with a report that says, oh, yeah, they were totally colluding,
what's going to
happen? It would be a louder news cycle, but it wouldn't actually change anything at the end of the day. Because you'd have the Republicans saying, well, we don't believe it, and we're not going to leave this president behind. So, again, nothing would happen. We're in the exact same position we would be if Mueller had been, like, full on, yeah, I got a phone call of them colluding. They like, called each other up, like, hey, mm-hmm. Russia, you want to collude? Sure, right. Trump campaign, let's go collude. That would not change anything that's happening other than the news cycle.
So, you know, I have been struggling for a while now trying to get a second book proposal out. And just about a year ago, I sat down with my agent and decided, you know what, I think I'm going to do something kind of memoir-ish. And that forced me to go back and try to find all those photographs through all the riffraff that is, like, scattered in all these different homes. And as I was doing that, I was like, this is no way to keep these memories alive. I'm pulling all these old photographs, trying to remember stories. And so, you know what? That was the perfect time to preserve them digitally by using Legacy Box.
Legacy Box is the world's largest, most trusted digitizer of home movies and photos.
Almost 500,000 families have trusted Legacy Box, like over 450,000. That's a lot of people. They've got over a decade of experience, and all the work is done by hand right here in the USA.
which makes me feel comfortable filling a box full of our treasures and sending it along. Like, I feel like it's completely safe. And it is. It is. They send you the box the size you want. You fill up your legacy box, you know, and they do the rest. And they've got very easy to follow instructions. They have barcodes for every single item. And then you can go online and track every moment of the digitization as it's moving through their system. And, you know, there's so many different ways to get it. You want on a thumb drive, you want them online, you want them on DVD. It's amazing.
There's never been a better time to digitally preserve your memories. Visit legacybox.com today to get started. Plus, for a limited time, they're offering our listeners an exclusive discount. Go to legacybox.com/45th to get 40% off your first order. Go to legacybox.com/45th and save 40% today. Get started preserving your past.
So basically you're saying this whole time Mueller's been pretty much powerless anyways. It's just been kind of having an official determination one way or the other. For the history books, for the media, for elections, that's what you're saying? That's the only impact it would have had anyways?
No. So this is not a question of
Because if that's the case, then
anyway.
This has sucked. For the waiting for this
Of course it has. Like, we've been in a crisis for 2 years. Like, yeah. Mueller can't stop it from being a crisis. It was always a crisis. What Mueller could do is offer a way to offer an independent voice, independent judgment. What she then didn't do, which is a little bit odd. So rule of law is obviously kind of an issue in this country right now. We have some struggles with it. But this also isn't strictly a rule of law question. It's not about could Trump be prosecuted for this. The question that special counsel is looking into a bit is like, is this an impeachable offense? That's not a question for the DOJ to decide. That's a question for the political branches. That's a question for Congress to decide. So it was always a political question. It was never a legal determination. And the legal determination, you know, whatever that was, it's not going to change how the Republicans feel about supporting Trump. So again, Mueller couldn't save us. But it does give us some, well, see, this thing though, like the fact that that's Mueller's one power was to give us conclusions and he didn't do that. That's the real tragedy here. So yeah, to that extent, it was a waste of time. No, it's not. I take it back. Because again, there were serious crimes that were uncovered and prosecuted.
Right, right.
We have legal actions that, the spinoff investigations, which matter in terms of like people should not be immune from prosecution because they're like close to Trump, but also the indictments against the Russians that did matter. We do have, I think, at the very least, there will be never a question again, except for Trump, that yes, Russia did interfere. Yes, they are trying to hurt America and help Trump, and I think that may have. I would like to believe, and I think it's probably the case, that is now an established social fact in America. That is no longer up for disagreement. That part is established beyond any doubt. Mueller has done that.
Mm. I see in your notes that you've raised a couple of unanswered questions. And one has to do with
Flynn. Yeah.
Well, there's Flynn, right?
Fucking Flynn. Mueller better explain that one. I'm just saying.
Right. Right. Because that, I don't understand. Like when that happened, we're like, oh, he's getting something. Something's coming out of this. I mean, there's got to be some real juicy, they're getting something, but maybe it's still there. But you know what? Now I'm kind of like, for those of you following us in our other life as undisclosed people doing work on the wrongful conviction, there's so many cases like, oh, something's going to happen. And then like, it kind of, you know, I'm starting to feel a little bit like sometimes shit doesn't happen. Sometimes it really just isn't justice here. But anyhow, a couple other questions you raised was one about the Assange indictment. And you said there was like a semi-revelation. What are you talking about there?
That was Seamus Hughes, actually, his finding in the basically the cut and paste error that seemed to suggest there was like a sealed Assange indictment somewhere.
I knew Seamus in his previous lifetime at the National Counterterror Center. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. And he is now like the pacer wizard.
He's amazing. He's like suing the government over this. But go ahead.
So, yeah, that seems to be a thing that has not been resolved and is still hanging out there.
Explain that. Explain what it was exactly for folks who might not have caught it.
So he found another sealed indictment that where someone, it looked, and it seems to have definitely been, a case where a attorney with the DOJ was, you know, using a template. That's what attorneys often do when you're filing the same kind of motion or whatever over and over again. You use a pre-existing one, change the names,
right.
Good to go. Someone forgot to change the names. And Julian Assange was the name they forgot to change.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, but like, okay, so if there are no more sealed indictments, which that's what Barr's report said, that's one of like the parts of Barr's report, and there aren't many.
What is that about then?
Categorical, saying like there are, nor did the special counsel obtain any sealed indictments that have yet to be made public. Okay, so I guess there's the possibility that Assange one was not by a special counsel, or it's possible that There was no sealed indictment against him.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Know. So there could be an Assange indictment that has nothing to do with the Mueller team.
I guess. Or is it one? That's the only two possibilities I see.
Mm. Okay. All right. Well, one thing I saw you also noted was that, and the news cycle moves on.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we'll have more to discuss as the fight to get the full report continues. And then as we get whatever summary Barr is going to give us eventually. But, you know, when there was just all Brexit hell breaking loose when I was in the UK. And I was like, am I better off here or there? Where should I stay? It's a mess all over the place. Well, yeah, the status quo continues here. So North Korea. I saw that Trump claimed, and I don't know if it was in a tweet or if it was at a statement at a presser, I don't know where it was, that he's decided not to issue any sanctions against North Korea, right?
Well, so here's the, I don't know if when this happened, if you were in the stateside when that all went down, but there was like a weird kerfuffle when Trump out of the blue starts tweeting about like, I'm not going to impose this set of sanctions on North Korea.
Because he likes Kim.
Well, it was kind of confusing because there'd just been some like sanctions that came out that were pretty important. Mm-hmm. And I forget how long it was. It wasn't that long after there was suddenly a White House clarification that like they said, oh, actually the sanctions that he just said were canceled, they hadn't been implemented yet. They were future sanctions we were planning and now will not be implemented.
Well, that's the same thing. I mean, it's like, you know.
Well, no, because people first thought naturally that the tweet applied to the sanctions that had just gone into effect.
Oh, so there were sanctions that had gotten into effect. Okay, I thought. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So people first thought that Trump was talking about those. And then the White House is like, oh, no, he's talking about future ones coming into effect. Mm.
So right now there are some sanctions against North Korea for their ongoing testing and building.
But the new update is that actually, of course, all along, Trump was talking about the ones that just got into effect.
Oh,
and the whole story about there were, in fact, no future sanctions that were being contemplated that are now canceled. He was talking about the ones that had just gone to his own, you know, agency had the Treasury had just put into practice.
So that's it. He can just say, nope, not going to happen. And that's the end of that.
Well, they're going to happen. They're still happening because, yeah, no, the aides quickly walked it back and they tried to pretend he was talking about different sanctions. So it didn't look like he was issuing fake orders. But again, it's a sign of the weakness and chaotic nature.
He tweets the orders, right?
Trump tweets orders and they're rarely followed. And this is another example of that.
Yeah. I'm okay with that.
Just basically a PR headache. It's not an actual governmental issue because what actually is law is not what Trump tweets. I guess that's reassuring. Mm.
So I love classic pieces. I'm talking about the kind of pieces. And when I say pieces, I mean accessories like shoes and purses and, you know, like fundamental wardrobe needs. They're just classics and well-made and will last forever. But a lot of times you got to pay out of your nose for them. And that's not easy.
Yeah, everyone needs those basics, as I'd call them. Just the stuff that you're going to wear every day and that needs to look good and be easy, but you don't want to spend too much money or time worrying about.
And that's why we both shop with Everlane. Everlane makes only premium essentials using the finest materials without traditional markups.
Would you buy a t-shirt for $50 if you knew it only cost $7 to make? Well, we wouldn't. And with Everlane, you never have to.
The amazing thing about Everlane, and there's not a lot of companies that do this, right? They are so completely transparent. They want you to know what you're paying for and why. So they actually tell you the real costs. I mean, what company, what manufacturer does that? They tell you about every step of the process, from the materials they use to the ethical factories they work with. And at the end of the day, not only do you know how much that piece costs to make, I mean, beautiful, beautiful pieces. Like one of my favorite clutches and classic pair of shoes, pumps that I wear for work situations. Everlane.
Everlane's clothes look better, cost less, and last longer. Because Everlane sells directly to you, their prices are 30 to 50% lower than traditional retailers.
And right now, you can check out our personalized collection, the things that Susan and I got from Everlane, at everlane.com/45th. Plus, you'll get free shipping on your first order. That's everlane.com/45th. Once again, that's everlane.com/45th.
I also saw some news. I was like barely following headlines while I was there but it was really troubling. Two bits of news that troubled me in terms of, you know, I mean, they say that, you know, budget is a moral document. Number one, Trump saying that no, not a single dollar goes to Puerto Rico anymore. And number two, Betsy Davis, I don't even know how to pronounce it, DeVos, whatever, saying that no more money for the Special Olympics. What?
DeVille?
What the F is happening?
Yeah, she's cutting off like autism research, autism funding, and Special Olympics. Yeah, like there were definitely a lot of like Republican takes like, Trump, take a few victory laps here. Why the hell are you immediately diving in with like ending funding for Special Olympics of all things?
Right. Of all things. Oh, yeah. And also, isn't the ACA being repealed completely?
Oh, yeah. Well,
let's forget about that. That's kind of major news.
Yeah, that's that again. Why dive back into this fight? So there's a huge question of why suddenly Trump is all on board with the. So this time the ACA is not being attacked legislatively. What happened ages ago now, there was a ruling from the district court in Texas that said the ACA is unconstitutional because it was a tax, but the tax was canceled by the Republican legislature. Mm-hmm. So now there's no tax, which means it's not constitutional and the whole thing has to go away, which is a bizarre decision on many fronts. But
Wait, hold on. Let me just get this straight. Because they removed the mandate, there's no longer a tax. That should mean that it is constitutional.
So therefore, the tax power is no longer in. So what happened before when previously it was gone to the Supreme Court?
I understand. Okay.
The conclusion was that it was the tax power being exercised. There's no longer a tax being implemented. So therefore, the tax power. That's kind of
so basically, if the tax is.
It's a lot more nuanced.
If there's a tax implemented, that's unconstitutional. But I mean, like, so either how do you what? I don't understand.
I'm oversimplifying it, but yeah, that's the gist of the decision here. What's surprising and would be surprising is that the DOJ is now joining in and asking the appellate courts to affirm that decision. Now, usually for any legislation that's overruled or found unconstitutional, the DOJ is expected to defend it if there's any possible basis for doing so. If they have a good faith basis for defending it, they do. Whether or not they won the legislation, whether or not they were behind it, whether it was implemented by them or by a previous administration. The DOJ defends its laws. So that's how it works. Not anymore. Now they're going to go in full on and join this very, very minority opinion on fairly shaky legal grounds and saying, yes, please support this decision and please reverse the ACA.
The district court decision has been appealed. Is that what you're saying? And now the DOJ is joining?
Yeah.
Okay.
The DOJ is not asking. So they could and normally would oppose or they'd be joining the appeal like, hey, no, reverse this lower court. What the hell are they thinking? That's not happening here. So they are definitely trying to take away pre-existing conditions, protections, and there's a non-zero chance they'll succeed here.
So the ACA is gone.
Well, no. It's a. I don't feel confident. It's definitely going to stay, but I also don't.
I saw Susan Collins was highly concerned and sent a strongly worded letter.
Yeah. About that. I share Collins's strong concerns, but not her method of trying to respond to it. I think it's still more likely than not that the current Supreme Court would not join in and like affirm this decision because it's got some problems legally, but it's definitely not certain that they wouldn't reverse it.
You have a lot more faith in the Supreme Court than I do, I gotta say. But
I have very little faith at all, but they're still operating in some boundaries. I'd like to think that there are certain that it's more likely than not that they're not going to join a really stupid opinion.
Yeah, Ginsburg is keeping them in line, maybe. I don't know. All right, I wanted to end out with the story about, like we talked about, you know, what's next in terms of like the tit for tat that's going on with these investigations coming out of Congress. And maybe they're going to pivot to Hillary. But we have news about Kushner using WhatsApp. And by the way, I love WhatsApp. Totally the least secure method of communication ever.
You know what? I've actually never used WhatsApp, and I'm not 100% sure what it is. I know it's like a texting thing.
Right. The reason people love WhatsApp, especially if you communicate with people overseas, and I have like a lot of family overseas, and so WhatsApp is basically a free way to, you can make video calls, phone calls, and text, and do group texts, and it's just, it's easier than actually text messaging. You don't get the same data charges and all that stuff. And as long as you can connect to Wi-Fi, you don't even have to have like a phone service. You could have like no service. And like my youngest daughter, you know, she's 10, she's got a little iPod. She connects to Wi-Fi. She can message us using WhatsApp, even though she's not connected to an actual cell service. So it's very, very convenient that way, but it is completely not secure at all. You can send media through it, all that good stuff. And so Kushner apparently has been communicating with like foreign governments, passing on like official information.
Cough Saudis, yeah.
Through flipping WhatsApp. I mean, unbelievable. Should there not be hearings on this?
Was it an email? No. So therefore, it's not a problem.
That wouldn't. It's less secure than an email. It literally is less secure than email.
So his attorney's response is that it's actually not a problem because Kushner is taking screenshots of these communications to preserve them, therefore not violating like records preservation requirements.
What?
Yeah.
That's not happening. Yeah. And, which is another issue of this. Yeah, it's not secure, but also, yeah, you can clear your chat and that's it. There's no, you know, like if I go to my phone records and I look, I can see I can see the records of text messages going back and forth. I cannot see records of WhatsApp messages going back and forth because you're using, you know, Wi-Fi. You're not using the data service. So there's absolutely no record of what's happening. I can tell you that. You think he's...
That's why he's using it. That's why that's why he's using it.
Yeah.
Like, why would you possibly do that unless your whole point is you don't want to be found what you're doing? Like, the entire intent here is that he can talk to people, both domestic and foreign, and not be accountable for it.
All right. Anything else we want to touch on before we wrap up this sad week?
You know, it's not a sad week. Like, it's a good thing. I mean, Mueller's investigation needed to end.
Girl, I was waiting for Mueller time for a long time. But we did. There were people warning us, like Sarah Kendzior. There are a lot of people, and you have raised the warnings too.
I don't think that's even the issue. It's more like we need to see what's in the report first. We haven't even seen it, so I'm not even going to have like an emotional feeling about it until I see that.
All right, fair enough.
And I try, like, if Mueller found that he could not bring an indictment, I believe him. Like, literally the only thing I'm skeptical about is the whole Flynn thing. I feel like that may have been misjudgment. Mm-hmm. And I can't even judge that because I haven't seen the report yet. But I think it's conclusive to me that if Mueller found he could not indict for any sort of conspiracy-based crimes for Russian interference, then he couldn't. The evidence wasn't there. We don't know why that was. But the question is then what I would hope Mueller's report would answer. Like, what would be strange to me is if he has presumably a very lengthy report, and if he finds that there's no facts supporting an indictment for conspiracy or collusion related issues, then not explain why he indicted so many people for lying about their conduct with Russia. Like, it feels like those two things are in tension. If you again and again and again have people in Trump world lying about their Russian contacts and getting indicted and criminally charged and criminally convicted for those lies about their Russian contacts, what's the underlying reason? I would expect Mueller to address that in his report, but Barr does not mention that at all in his letter.
Do we have an idea of how big this report is?
No. We, in fact, don't even have an idea of, I think it was what Preet Bharara was talking about earlier. It's like, we don't even know how many sections it has, how many issues are addressed. So we'll have no way of knowing if Barr's summary, if it's one that's released, just totally omits entire sections of the report.
So that entire team of incredible attorneys that we've been, you know, watching grow over the last couple of years, like their job is done. Like, this whole thing is closed. Is that what we now understand? It's over. They're all going home.
So some of them have gone back to, some were still at DOJ. Some did leave DOJ. Some, it depends on who they were. But there are these, so again, there still are various, there's of course the spinoff investigations. Those are still going on, not affected at all. And then there were several investigations that are still ongoing that are directly under special counsel, or were directly under special counsel, that are still ongoing, like the strange corporate subpoena case before Supreme Court, that we still don't know what the hell that's about. Yeah, we still have Gates. Gates has got to be finished up. Flynn's not technically finished yet.
I'm going to predict that Trump is not going to be able to stop himself from publicly, like, slapping Mueller on the back, saying, thanks, buddy. He just can't help himself.
He already has. Yes, he thinks Mueller was upstanding. Or like, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Jesus. Okay, I missed that.
Yeah, of course.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
We'll have more next week. There's definitely more to be said about, I mean, I don't know if we'll have, we won't have a Barr summary by next week, but I suspect we'll be learning more about what's actually going on in the Mueller report.
You know, what a lot of people asked me when I was in London, they were like, do you think he's going to win in 2020? And I actually said yes to most of them.
You do?
I kind of do. Yeah.
I think it's possible. I think the odds are still.
Tell me what is going to stop Russia from like completely doing whatever the hell they want in 2020. There's nothing stopping them anymore.
I mean, that's, it depends what you mean by that. I would like to think we have, at least in terms of in terms of the social media interference, hopefully now that we're aware of it, there's less effect there, to the extent they even had an effect in the first place. With regard to the hacking, well, we haven't really addressed that yet. So we got to see if, that's a problem.
Well, I think we are steps and steps behind Russia, and we continue to be, and they know that they can, I mean, because we're decentralized, you know how easy it is to just go precinct to precinct. I mean, like they have so many potential targets, and there's no way that I think we are equipped to fight on every single one of those fronts. So that's my pessimistic take on that.
Here's why I still feel pretty good that Trump will not get reelected. Not certain by any means. I do not think it's foregone in any way. But I don't see the economy lasting out till 2020.
Oh, great.
So.
Well, there's that. But he is brilliant at, like, managing the message. He'll just be like, oh, it's their Congress's fault. It's the Democrat.
But
he just
intense economic pain, you can't message that away.
I do think I think if there is another GOP runner, like if somebody else runs against him within his own party, that could significantly reduce his chances and make, you know, I mean, because then they'll be attacking him, right? There'll be some. Right now, the problem is the GOP just kind of like everybody's just protecting him. So because their agenda is getting passed. And that's kind of at the end of the day what they care about. All right, Susan, we've got to wrap up now.
All right.
All right. Thanks for being on. And we'll talk to you guys in 7 days.
Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.